Welcome to In Discussion today, and my guest is Brent Hunter, author of The Rainbow Bridge. Brent, welcome to you.
Thank you, David.
It's such a pleasure, Brent. Enjoyed our meetings recently. This book is amazing. I'm eager to discuss some of the chapters. It's a summarization in many ways, and yet it has huge messages in other ways. What was the inspiration for the book?
Well, the inspiration for the book was kind of came out of my childhood, actually, because my mother was born and raised in Turkey, so she was Muslim. My father was Jewish and Christian, and we were raised as Christians. My father was also interested in Buddhism and transcendental meditation and other spiritual systems, so I spent a good portion of my life trying to kind of put it all together and figure out what it all means. And so after a series of profound awakening experiences, the Rainbow Bridge was a project that I thought was very important because it illuminates the common ground in all of the world's major religions. So it just felt like one of the reasons why I'm here on Earth at this time is to illuminate the common ground, which is also known as universal principles, to do my part in helping to bridge this gap between the current world that we live in and the world I think that we're all longing for and hoping and dreaming for, which is a world of peace and harmony and abundance.
When you indicated that you had traveled through some amazing experiences when you were young, would you also say that in many ways and for many people that could also be a psychological death that could awaken you, take you into a new sense of being, a new reality, be able to move seamlessly between this dimension and others?
Absolutely. I think, as a matter of fact, I think that when we have psychological deaths or deaths in many different areas of our lives, you know, shifts take place, and then we start to recognize and gain awareness that we're much more than, you know, the character or role that we play. And when we have those awakening experiences, when we have those shifts in consciousness, it really kind of causes us to think about who we are, and, you know, from there, the sky becomes the limit. In fact, the sky is not the limit. So, yeah, I think the variety of experiences that I've had really were important in shifting my consciousness and allowing me to, you know, play an even greater role in terms of who I am and why I'm here at this time and why I think we're all here at this time.
Your childhood, can you define that, what type of childhood it was and when you became aspired to seeing things differently, feeling things differently, seeing different opportunities, seeing a world with infinite opportunities?
Sure. So I think first and foremost, my childhood was, I think, unlike or similar to many people, had a number of different challenges. I mentioned the fact that I come from a multicultural and multi-religious background. I wouldn't really say that was a challenge, but it was a kind of a backdrop against which, you know, the rest of my life was kind of played out. There was a lot of, I would say, a fair amount of family discord that was going on, and a number of things like that, various challenges, which of course turned out to be some of the greatest gifts in my life. But it was through those challenges that I kind of started to wonder, you know, why we're here, what's going on, what's the purpose of life. And, you know, growing up at an early age, I just felt like the world that we were living in was certainly not the optimal world, and a world that was made for benefiting the largest number of people. It always seemed that there was a great amount of unfairness in the way the whole system is set up. And I think that my awareness of that grew over time. It wasn't something that I can't really point to any particular time that I felt that. It's just something that I felt from a very young age.
How did that manifest itself, or indeed expand, as you moved into later years, into your 20s and 30s, did you in any way have a dilution of that consciousness that transformed itself into something else? Or how did that journey take place?
Well, you know, after I graduated from college, I started to work for General Electric. I went into the information systems management program. They have a management training program, and spent a number of years at GE. And while I was there, I picked up a master's degree in counseling psychology and counseling in human relations. And I was just always really interested in people and interested in making a difference in the world in some way or another. I actually had a career change. After working for GE for a while, I decided to go into the field of psychology. So I sold my house in Philadelphia and moved to Chicago, where I attended the doctoral program in clinical psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And I felt like moving in that direction, I would be able to use my life skills to help make a difference, a greater difference in the world. That's a whole other story in and of itself. After doing very well for the first year, I decided it really wasn't something that I wanted to do. So I moved back into the world of business and decided that I wanted to make a difference through volunteer kind of efforts. But shortly after moving to San Francisco in 94, and again, going back into the business world and desiring to make a difference in the world by volunteer activities, I discovered the internet. And as soon as I discovered the internet, it was like, you know, they say this, as the saying goes, you know, a light bulb went off in my head. Well, it was really like a million light bulbs that went off. And I saw the power of the internet and the implications that it had for helping bring about an enormous shift in communication, but also an enormous shift in the way the whole planet works. So I would say the internet was it was a huge milestone in my life because everything kind of shifted from there. And that was when I started the online community known as The Park, which was the first globally oriented world community in cyberspace. I would say that the internet is another major component of my awakening process.
The internet is a powerful tool, is it not? And this book is written finding commonalities, a language, a new language that I believe that we're all attempting to and need to find. But in that, in your research, are you also today, in this very critical period, keeping an eye on other prophecies, such as the Mayan calendar and these other prophecies that talk about, particularly with the Mayan calendar in the ninth wave, this amazing communication vehicle that we have as the internet? Do you see all of these things being part of the journey, the trigger that needs to enlighten and awaken everybody today?
I absolutely do. As a matter of fact, it's really, really exciting. You know, all of the major world religions talk about, in their own different ways, they talk about an ending of time, and most importantly, a new beginning of time. And what you're pointing out about in terms of the Mayan calendar and the ninth wave is the ending of a 26,000-year cycle. But again, most importantly, it's the beginning of a new 26,000-year cycle. So I see these prophecies, specifically the Mayan calendar one and also the indigenous peoples and Native American population here in America, and all of the different world religions in terms of the ending of time and a new beginning of time. I think all of this converges, and it's all converging on this incredible time that we're living in. I think everyone, to one extent or another, really kind of is feeling more and more that the world is really not working in the way that it really could be working. It's working for a small number of people, and the vast majority of the rest of the billions of people on the planet, it's really not working anywhere near as well as it could be. So to me, I see this as a very, very exciting time that we're living in and an opportunity to consciously evolve our species and in fact the whole planet and everything on it to consciously evolve to a different period of time, a different period of time in which all of our systems are operating differently, where there's tremendous peace and harmony and collaboration and cooperation and sometimes I say prosperity, but it's really abundance, because I think that we live in a totally abundant universe. We're not experiencing abundance right now with the way the reality or with the way the matrix is constructed, but I don't think that that's our real nature. So it's a very exciting time to be alive and to be able to participate in this bridging across this period of time.
We resonated and we came together and saw and were illuminated, I believe, with each other's work, because, as you know, I have Crossing Over the Bridge, and here you have the Rainbow Bridge, and the merits and the missions are very similar. The Rainbow Bridge, I understand, is the first of a series of books that you're going to work on, this one, Universal Book of Living, Dying, and Dreaming. And I have to just take an extract out of the foreword here, Brent, if I may, for our audience, so that they have some visibility. From Neil Donald Walsh, from the beginning of time, all we've ever wanted is to be loved and be loved. And from the beginning of time, all we've done on this planet is make it nearly impossible to experience our highest desire. That is because we have imagined in our illusions that one of us is somehow better than another. This idea of betterness has created divisions between religions, between cultures, between people, and between nations. The idea is also a false thought, directly contradicting the greatest teaching of all religions in the world, which, put into one sentence, reduces itself to a simple truth. We are all one. And the Rainbow Bridge, a wonderful little treasure conceived by Brent Hunter, is a demonstration of that truth that you can hold in your hand. And once held in your hand, you will hold it in your heart as well, and it will illuminate your soul. I've read this because it seems to me that this book, if I looked at old writers, maybe I could cite Shakespeare or Wordsworth or the sonnets. This book and this narrative is very much in the same vein, I think. It has huge messages, and yet it's written as traditional prose and very simply, but it's very, very impactful and has a strong delivery. Is that the way that you had intended it to be, rather than a traditional longer narrative?
First of all, thank you for the compliment. And the quote that you read from Neil Donald Walsh was very beautiful, and I'm really very, very grateful. The first edition of The Rainbow Bridge was published in 2001, and I was very clear on what my primary mission was at that time, and that was to produce the absolute smallest possible book with the smallest number of words. And so the first edition, which is now called the Collector's Edition, was actually a 3x5 book. It was a little spiral-bound book, 3x5 inches, and you can just, you know, put it in your pocket. A lot of people gave me feedback. They had it on their nightstand and would read from it before they went to bed every night. But in any event, yes, the conscious intention was to produce the smallest possible book. When I started getting a lot of really amazing feedback on it, that was when I decided, okay, I'd like to maybe expand this a little bit and produce a standard edition, like in a 6x9 format. So that was when, in 2003, I came out with the expanded edition, which was pretty much the same universal principles, but just expanded. And one of the things that I thought was very, very important is to take these universal principles and to show how they can be applied in our in a practical, real-world way. So I've got a section in there that talks about how do we apply universal principles in the world of business and commerce, very, very important area that we need to help transform, as well as using the universal principles in the media and in government, etc. The original purpose was to write the smallest possible book that would be read by as many people in the world as possible, so therefore it had to be simple, and yet at the same time, It also needed to contain very, very profound principles of the deep esoteric wisdom of the ages. So the Rainbow Bridge, the version that you have is the 2003 edition, and yes, the plan is to write several others in the series, and I'm working on finalizing the next installment, which should be out within the next few months or so.
Let us go to the preface, and I was very interested in this. Those who know do not speak, those who speak do not know, Tao Te Ching. Can you explain that statement that you made there at the beginning of the book?
This is an example of some very profound wisdom that I came across in my studies of the world religions and studies in psychology, and it's one of these profound pieces of information that really is very, very difficult to explain. It was so profound that I felt that I needed to put this in the book, because if people haven't heard this before, I felt it was a very important thing for people to hear. The common ground that's illuminated in the Rainbow Bridge, really it all boils down to the heart essence, the pith essence of all the world's religions, and is not a theoretical treatise on the history of religion or the details or the different stories with, or dogma or details of contained within each one. And so part of what's really important is to move from the realm of our minds, our rational minds, which are very, very powerful, very useful tools for us, and yet in the grand scheme, they're a tiny, tiny, minute portion of who we actually are, and a very small portion of the gifts that we actually have. So as powerful as our minds are, it's important for us to move, I feel, to move beyond our mind. Sometimes I say, use your mind to go beyond your mind. So I can't really explain. The best way for me to explain it is to simply read the quote, "Those who know do not speak, and those who speak do not know." But as you can see underneath that, I mentioned that, you know, I feel very important that something needs to be said, and that there is a way of communicating that something which is able to provide deep value, and that's basically what the whole purpose of the Rainbow Bridge is.
I read the statement from Neil Donald Walsh, because at the end of the statement, "Once held in your hand, you will hold it in your heart as well, and it will illumine your soul." The real resolution that came out of my mind from this book, wrong or right, not putting words in your mouth, but it's what I've got out of it, it is all about returning us and our sovereignty of the soul. Would that be a good statement for you, or would that be too shallow for what you're trying to reach out with?
Well, that I would say is a very accurate statement. At the same time, the Rainbow Bridge, in order for it to be really effective, it has to appeal to a whole lot of different people, billions of people. And each person, as we know, I mean, we have this kind of spiritual journey that we go on in our lives, and people are at different stages or different points along that journey. And so I think that some people will read this book and find the principles of The Secret, for example, or the Law of Attraction, and say, ah, that's it. You know, that's what I take out of the book. And for them, that's a very important principle or concept that they'll take out at that particular time that they read the book. And then other people will say, it's all about oneness. It's all about love and compassion. And depending on where they're at in their journey, and they feel that that's really the ultimate teaching. And then other people may say, ah, no, it's actually the idea that life is an illusion, that this whole experience that we live in here is illusory, and is not exactly what we think it is. It's actually so much more than what we think it is. So the messages contained in the Rainbow Bridge are many. And I think that, in fact, I encourage people to read it over and over again, because my experience so far is that people have told me that they get different things out of it every time they read it. And it's also possible, you know, to put it aside for a year or a month or for a period of time. And when you come back to it, it may speak something different, you know, based on what's going on in your life today. So the return to the soul, a return to the oneness and the unity of all life is a very, very important aspect. And there's a lot of other different aspects as well that are in here.
You describe the way that we can fall out of this reality that we're in the book and find ourselves, find other realities, dream our dreams, and so on. And I'm finding in it, because the Rainbow Bridge is about connecting people, that you have a very universal message, not only for an audience who is focused on religion, but an audience who could be sitting around a board table in a corporation, or an audience anywhere in the world who is looking to better themselves and be in service to others. And it's almost, to me, looking through it, there are certain chapters that are very important. I think life as a dream is very important, because I think that we have been conditioned over so many generations not to dream. But being in service, I think, is very important for corporations, corporately, not individually. So I'm thinking that when you wrote this, you, at a time in your life, did fall out into another reality of feeling, thinking, and seeing, and then realize that you still needed to be in what some would call the matrix in order to make that work, to ensure that that wisdom that you receive can be communicated to others in this world, on this planet, in the changing world that we're finding ourselves in now, so that everybody can navigate and take the right road armed with these principles. Would that be a good definition for you?
Yes, it would. The whole idea of having a really profound awakening experience and a realization place, the whole idea of being able to bring back this knowledge, the whole idea of being able to bring back this knowledge and wisdom is very, very important, certainly in my own life, because I feel that having this information that was given to me, I feel like I'm just a conduit or a vessel, or, you know, a being that has been given this information. It's not my information. I feel that I have a responsibility to share it with the world. And my experience so far is that, you know, you can have these awakening experiences and really profound experiences, and then trying to come back into the quote-unquote real world or the matrix it can be very, very challenging, very difficult, and it's precisely for that reason why I feel like the Rainbow Bridge is even more important now than ever been before, because I feel that millions and millions of people all around the world are awakening and wanting to be of service, not necessarily knowing how or what to do, and I feel that the Rainbow Bridge and the universal principles contained within it provide a kind of a pathway or a framework for navigating these times that we're living in right now.
Because you're using amazing words here, brilliance, perseverance, adversity, the invitation, bliss, which I think is very important. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that there is a huge change in humanity across the board, and in that, I'm sure as part of that journey we'll see much chaos. But before chaos there was calm, and after chaos there will be calm. If you were sitting in an organization, perhaps the UN or something like that, and you were to take these principles, how would you place, or what order would you appoint the most important attributes of society today, taken what you've written here? Would it be something along the lines of peace first, beyond anything else, and love, and then social accord, economy? How would you interpret that?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. And I think that the answer is it's different for different people, and it's different for different types of organizations. First of all, I think that the whole idea of doing something out there in the world to help increase peace is very noble and very important, I think, for everyone to be thinking about that and doing their piece. But it all begins with peace within yourself. The world around us is nothing more than a collective manifestation of our internal minds. And so to that extent, it's really important for every single one of us to go within and find the peace within ourselves, because if we don't have some kind of semblance of peace within ourselves and harmony within ourselves, then we may end up doing more damage in the world by going out there trying to fix things. So the whole idea that love and compassion, of course, are certainly way at the top of my list, love and compassion. If we could just distill all these principles into a single word, it probably would be the word love. But compassion plays a very, very important role. And then I think that for me, one of the things that's really, really powerful is the power of our minds. We're just starting to begin to understand how powerful our minds really are. And, you know, with the movie The Secret and the book The Secret and all the different authors and programs that have sprung up around that, I think that one of the first of all, I think that there's that the Secret and the Law of Attraction and these programs which talk about it are total gifts to humanity, very, very important. And I'm very happy to see that these great works were brought into culture and society. I think that the next stage of applying the Law of Attraction, for example, is going to be the collective application of the Law of Attraction. So in other words, using these principles on a mass scale, a global scale, with a coherence with one another, with an aligned intent, an aligned attention on what it is that we're trying to create. In the world of business, for example, I think that there's a couple things that I could point out that are that I think is very, very important. You know, as we've talked about, there's a shifting in the world of business now with a greater recognition that businesses that just operate on the single bottom line of financial success are kind of a thing of the past. And this notion of operating businesses and commerce by a triple bottom line based on financial success and social equity, environmental protection, this is a very important development. And something that if businesses, I think the successful businesses of the future will have to be socially responsible businesses. So I think if people are in business wondering what they can do to evolve their businesses and to be a part of the solution here on the planet, I think that would be a very, very good starting point, is to start exploring the whole concept of social responsibility in business, conscious capitalism, the triple bottom line. And there's also now a new legal entity, which we've also talked about, which is the B Corporation, which allows businesses to set themselves up legally and structurally, and, you know, in all their paperwork in the legal structure, so that they're socially responsible businesses. And so these things are ways of incorporating and using universal principles in a way that'll really make a big difference in the way the world unfolds at this time.
I was really interested in page 94, and I must find the title of the chapter, Universal Responsibility. You talked about media. What the media reports on or presents to the public has the ability to influence and create shifts in the perceptions and beliefs of its readers and viewers. What messages are we trying to put across? Are we trying to educate, inform, and expand? Or are we just trying to make the greatest amount of money possible by whatever means, no matter what the cost to the public? That is very, very indicative of the world in its present state, is it not? That it is certainly on that track.
It certainly is. It certainly is, and it's because the media is currently run as a business, and a business that only uses a financial bottom line. So therefore, the media, that just by the way it's structured and set up, is not necessarily designed to, you know, to provide fair and balanced, fair and balanced portrayal of events and. In a way that'll serve the greatest number of people. Yeah, I think it's very, very important. And transformation of the media is, I feel, it's already happening to a certain extent, but it's going to really need to take place in a pretty dramatic shift in a different direction, which I'm certain will happen because it is our destiny to be living in peace and harmony and abundance. So I'm happy to say that I'm excited that I have a firm belief that we're going to be moving in this direction, and is that the Rainbow Bridge helps to create this pathway and vehicle which can help us steer through these kind of perilous waters as we move forward into the future.
I'm going to move on in a minute to the words discernment, knowledge, wisdom, but before I do, to complete this narrative on business. It was very interesting to me that Bolivia has been the first country in the world to develop and pass the Earth Law, which essentially puts the humanities and Mother Nature on the same level playing field. And it also presents a solution where we do not continue as an extractive economy, but we move forward as an economy and a people that sow back into the land. That is also indicated in this book to me in a roundabout way. Is that part of that new win-win scenario that you see as the makeup behind corporations in the future?
Absolutely. And first, I have to say I'm not totally familiar with Bolivia and what law you're referring to, but I think that any law that brings into focus the role that the environment plays and Mother Earth. I mean, I think that we live in a completely interconnected, interdependent system here on the planet, and that includes Mother Earth. And so I don't think that it's possible for us, or certainly it's not desirable for us, to be moving forward into the future just extracting and using resources in the kind of way that we've been doing. I think we have to be doing things in a much more conscious manner in order to have a truly sustainable world that works for our children and our children's children and all the generations in the future.
Can we move on, Brent, to those words, discernment, knowledge, wisdom? And also perhaps even returning to the statement, I've made sovereignty of the soul. Because this is a huge part of this book, and it's a huge part to get over to people to ensure that they understand. In switching from hundreds, if not thousands of years of those human frailties of fear, codependence, addictions, everything else you can think of, to these words of pure discernment, non-judgment, understanding karma. If you were to define to somebody in ensuring that they understand this book and that they can use it time and time again as a reference, where would you put knowledge and wisdom in that order again? Because I often wonder, knowledge is a wonderful thing, but it doesn't replace wisdom, does it?
I think you're absolutely correct. I think knowledge is very important. Facts and figures, and we're talking about a rational mind, of course, now. So our rational, logical thinking mind is a very powerful tool that we can use to our benefit, and we can move way beyond our rational mind to the realms of wisdom and deep wisdom. So knowledge, to me, is, you know, you have information and facts and figures, and then knowledge is kind of a step above information because you're drawing parallels and bringing in more information. Wisdom, I think, really transcends and is many steps beyond facts and figures and information and knowledge. So knowledge is very important, but wisdom is something that first of all, is very difficult to describe, and normally comes about through experience as opposed to just reading or intellectually understanding something.
Would you also say that wisdom comes from a deeper understanding of the universe itself, thinking beyond our planetary border, but thinking universally? Yes, I mean, certainly for all of us, after 1,000 mistakes made in our lifetime, and surely we'll make them more of them in our next lifetimes, it is a time to think more universally, is it not?
It absolutely is, and I think the times that we're living in right now require us to be thinking in fundamentally different ways, thinking in universal ways, thinking in global ways, as a single unified family of humans on the planet, a global family. I think we need to be really kind of stepping into our power, stepping into our real capabilities, stepping into the wisdom that we already have deeply seated within our souls and within our DNA. And so, yes, I think that moving beyond into a much more universal understanding of the world in which we live and the entire universe and the entire cosmos that we live in as well, because everything is completely connected, we're completely at one with one another, and everything else is simply an illusion. And so when we drop from our head into our hearts, we can feel this and we can know this to be true. And when we're in our head trying to understand facts and figures and history and pieces of information, again, it's very helpful and very useful, and yet there's a step beyond that, and that's the state that you're talking about, and it's the awareness that everything is connected. It's the awareness that we live in a completely interdependent universe, and this wisdom that we're talking about is a really important aspect that I think people are starting to see more and more in themselves and recognize that they already have the wisdom within themselves, and it's just in the process of awakening to that and further developing it.
It's always good, isn't it, to put benchmarks out for us humans, just as it is when we're teaching children, to give them those benchmarks that they can look for and they can meet, because it makes it an exciting prospect. When you found true wisdom and true bliss, which certainly means going within oneself, would it be correct in your mind to say at that stage you have lost those human frailties of fear, judgment, denial, all of those things that we have been conditioned with for so many lifetimes?
Well, I think I think that we can, we have these kind of things that happen to us, we grow up in this world, and we have experiences that form these kind of mental imprints upon us. And we can have these profound awakening experiences where we suddenly recognize the nature of the universe, the nature of ourselves, the nature that everything is 100% completely interconnected. And the whole idea of the sovereignty of the soul and how, religion can help us move towards our greater ideal, but I think religion itself has to be transcended in order to really come to the greatest recognition and appreciation for who we are as individuals and as a collective species as well.
As we travel through life, I'm thinking there's two words to me that are extremely important that you quote. One of them is surrender, and the other one is synchronicities. Surrender, I'll ask you for the audience to define that, but more energy going into defining synchronicities, because I believe that understanding synchronicities is a great part of this equation in finding this new world, finding this bliss that we're all looking for.
Absolutely. And if I could just spend 1 minute talking about the question you just asked me before was about, do I think that we lose our frailties? Do we lose all of our kind of weaknesses? Or I don't know that we necessarily totally lose them when we become more fully centered in who we are. Those tendencies can always be there, but I think that we can greatly reduce their influence on our lives. I just wanted to make sure I answered that the previous question as completely as possible. Now, what you're asking about surrender, my definition of surrender is, and this is one of these things that there's a fine line between surrendering to the situations that we find ourselves in life and just giving up. Surrender, as I'm talking about, is not a giving up process or quitting kind of process. It's more about doing whatever we can in the present moment to improve ourselves, to improve and be of service to those around us, but also at the same time to recognize that there is there's another force in the universe, there's another power at work. And so in the sense of surrendering ourselves to this greater source and greater power, of which we are actually one and the same, surrendering can therefore bring us closer to our true nature. And you asked about synchronicities. Yeah, synchronicity is very, very exciting, and I'm happy to say that there's greater and greater recognition of this whole dynamic. And so synchronicities are events that happen that may appear to be coincidental but are not coincidental. And when we first of all open our minds to the fact that synchronicities can happen, I think that the moment that we do that, we instantaneously open ourselves to receiving more synchronicity and more meaningful coincidences, if you will, and things happening to ourselves, chance encounters, or things that seem like chance encounters with people or various situations or events that we experience. All of these things, in terms of synchronicity, is that there's this exquisite interweaving of these experiences in our lives that we can gradually recognize that there is no such thing as a pure coincidence, and that everything is actually incredibly connected in a really beautiful, magical, powerful way. And my experience has been that when you kind of plug yourself into this whole notion that synchronicities exist, the experience, you experience more and more and more of them, and your life literally becomes a very, very magical, incredibly exciting kind of journey.
And the reason that I mentioned that was, returning back to my comment about kids, it's always great for kids to have something at the end of the journey, a tangible proof of their efforts, I think, makes them feel good, makes them feel wanted. And this is why I was going down that road, because when we talk about bliss, and we talk about abundance, and we can infuse this idea into these kids' minds that if you travel through your journey, through all of the different experiences and pains and joys and everything else that comes through it, that if you can find a way then through meditation or whatever it takes to that bliss, then they will find something that they could never have dreamed of. Perhaps that's something that we should be instilling into our children today.
I think, yeah, absolutely. You know, the work of James Redfield in particular, in educating people and kind of opening the door to this idea of synchronicity, I think it's just been, you know, an incredible gift to humanity. And yes, children and adults, and I think all of us can benefit from having increased awareness and education of this. And yes, if we could bring some of these principles that we're talking about, and especially the concept of synchronicity and that everything is completely connected, if we can bring that into the educational system, I think that all of us would benefit enormously from doing so.
there is part of this book in the narrative that talks about a disconnect, and I won't talk about the context in which that's provided. But I'm a great narrative thinker with my programming. I always break my programs up into the disturbance at the beginning and the effort traveling through and the resolution solution at the end, which is something that is used by writers. But when I was looking through your book, I saw it not only as a narrative, but also as a cross-reference. Because I found myself during the second read being able to go from an area of patience back to discernment, and then looking at truth and honesty in connecting these in a sequence, however that sequence works for you, in when you are actually working, dealing, and loving people. To be able to look at these and cross-reference between the chapters and not necessarily take them verbatim for the order in which you place them. Would that be a sensible comment?
Absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I suggest in the back of the book that people just open up the book from time to time and just see what page they open it up to and see synchronicity at work. It's been my experience with a whole lot of different people who have read it have said exactly that, is that they open it up to a certain page, they look at it, and they see something that they've never seen before, or they see it in a different way, or something, some aspect of it becomes really important to them. And so, yeah, you can read the book front, you know, from the front to the rear, or you can just pick it up and just... randomly flip to any particular page, or look in the table of contents and look at a particular principle, and I think it'll be really important, because whenever you do that, you can actually see different things at different times.
We close to the end of the program, Brent, and my final question in this, which I'm sure will be a series of programs together, and correlating this with my own life and my work, certainly my life reflects where I've gone, where I've been, and where I'm going. And in your book, would you say that in writing this book, it reflects much about your journey as well, as much as what you have inspired to, or what you have observed in other people over the years?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't have been able to write the book unless I actually had experiences, because I feel that, as I mentioned before, the book is not like a theoretical kind of cognitive discourse, but it's like the heart, fundamental heart, pith essence. And so, yes, my whole life's journey has been really quite amazing and incredible, and it's these principles that were able to help me get through some very challenging times while running a business, the Park Online community that I referred to earlier. And so, yes, I find myself all throughout the pages of this book.
Brent Hunter, author of The Rainbow Bridge, great friend and wisdom keeper, I would say. It has been an honor to share this program with you today, and I look forward to programs in the future.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I look forward to the future.
And to our listeners today, I do hope that you have enjoyed this program as much as I. You can gain information on this and any other program in the series at davidgibbons.org. Meanwhile, wherever you are in this world, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.